The Coptimizer podcast is being powered by Axon Coaching. Axon Coaching was purpose-built for today's public safety employees to help them accomplish goals and live better. What is it, you ask? One-on-one video-based coaching with officers who have been in your shoes and know firsthand what it means to live and work in public safety. The program will connect you with certified coaches who combine their years of success from the world of law enforcement with world-class training from Axon. Get the support, resources, motivation you need to live the life you want. Axon coaches are relatable, knowledgeable, and confidential. And most importantly, they get results. Why should the keys to unlocking our peak performance be reserved for just the boardroom or the playing field? Unleash your full potential today and get started with Axon Coaching. Log into axon-coaching.com and learn more about how to bring this program to your agency and community. So, enough of that. It's time to Coptimize. Greetings all, what is the good word? This is the Coptimizer podcast, and I'm your host, Patrick Flanley, retired chief of police, and like I said on the intro, all around wannabe renaissance man. I've got a ton of interest and a lot of things that I want to cover on this show. No topic is off limits. But today, just want to spend a few minutes introducing you to me, look just a little bit about my background, and mostly I just want to talk about what we're going to cover on this show and the guests that we're going to bring on and what the purpose of this show is going to be. So let's get into it. My Twitter handle reads husband, father, son, friend, veteran, athlete, urban warrior, reader, thinker, lover, doer. And if you've never tried to encapsulate your life into 120 characters, I challenge you to do so. So I'm not going to bore you with going into all that. I'm very fortunate. I have an amazing family and live in a great community. I've had a ton of great experiences. But mostly what we're going to talk about on this show are things that I'm very passionate about, and that is the profession of policing and what we can do to ensure that we have the best police officers working in our communities, keeping us all safe and doing the noble job of policing, because policing is a noble profession. I believe it may be the most noble profession. I also know and understand that it's a difficult job and it's not for everybody. So we're going to cover all kinds of topics. Me, I just retired earlier this year after 27 years in policing. My last 10 years, I served as a chief. You know, just a little bit about my background. I guess it's probably very similar to many of you. I'm a veteran of the United States Air Force. I did not serve in a wartime environment. I served from, was in there from 86 to 90. I had a ton of cool experiences there. Great people, great training, great friends, great maturation process. But from there, I moved back to my hometown. I went to Purdue University. I'm a graduate of Purdue University. Started my policing career in 1995. After a brief stint as a restaurant manager and bartender. I bring that up because if you ever want to learn about customer service or how to stack things in your mind, bartend in a very busy restaurant or bar. Yep. I worked in a place called Harry's Chocolate Shop. And no, we did not serve chocolate shakes. Well, I guess maybe we did. But super busy campus bar. It got some props recently from former Purdue president Mitch Daniels, he's on his way out, doing an interview with President George Bush, former President George Bush, I should say. Anyway, I digress. So my policing career patrol was a patrol commander, sergeant, lieutenant, worked in our multi-jurisdictional drug task force for several years as a supervisor there. Part of that time we spent with a FBI Safe Streets task force. One of my many ancillary duties in patrol was SWAT. I was a team member, team leader, a team commander. Served on our board for the Indiana SWAT Officers Association. There, I got to work with team leaders and commanders from around the state. That was a tremendous experience. Learned a ton. I did all kinds of things, like a lot of you did. Well, I went to a lot of different trainings. As chief, I went to the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. They have a state and local leaders program that I strongly encourage administrators to look into. It was an amazing program. Prior to that, I went to Northwestern's School of Police Staff and Command. I went to their Frontline Leadership School. Been to several different leadership schools over the years, ranging in different topics from drug task force, SWAT command. I was a firearms instructor for 20 years, generalist instructor. I think really what I want to focus on for this show are some of the things that I really began to see as the important things moving forward. And that is improving officer health and wellness and performance. We hear health and wellness all the time. Over the years, it's taken on, I think, a few different thought processes about what's important. You know, certainly mental health is important. Emotional health is important. And I think in the years following the Obama administration's 21st Century Policing Initiative, we really started to focus on these things to improve outcomes in terms of emotional health and look to prevent things like police suicide, which are tremendously important. But one area where I thought we were maybe lacking or missing opportunities were in the physical side of health and wellness. And that's what we're going to cover on this show, about how all of these things interconnect and how they intersect to drive what I think is the most important metric that we should be looking at, is performance. And I'll get into a little bit about that. But yeah, I've been fortunate to have opportunities to work with some really great people over the last decade. I chaired our health and wellness committee for the Indiana Chiefs Association, in addition to our legislative committee, but we hosted multiple symposiums, brought in guests from around the country to really focus on this idea of how do we improve outcomes? How do we improve health and wellness for our police officers? I've presented at the IACP Health and Wellness Conference. Well, I guess I did it virtually because COVID shut it down. Earlier this year, I got to present at the National FOP Wellness Conference in Tennessee. And I say all this because I'm not an expert. I've just been fortunate to work with experts, and I have seen what good performance looks like. And I've also seen the dangers that we face as a profession from when we don't invest in health and wellness and we don't invest in performance. And that's, again, really what we want to focus on this podcast. So, yeah, I don't consider myself retired. I'm just retooling. I'm moving on from a profession where I was an active police officer. Now I want to take the lessons that I've learned over my career and apply them to the second half of my life, which is hopefully going to be spending a good amount of time with guests like we're having on this show and all of you, where we can talk about how do we make the profession better moving forward? How do we lean into some of these challenges, and how do we ensure that the next generation of police officers are properly trained, equipped mentally, physically, with all the right gear, and we optimize their chances for success. One of the things I've also done over my career was I like to consider myself an athlete, not just a tactical athlete from a patrolman and a SWAT perspective and the things that you need to be able to do on the job, but pretty much anything. If you like competing, I like competing. Doesn't matter if it's ping pong, chess, I don't know, you name it. So later in my career, I found things like CrossFit. I like to compete in old man CrossFit. It's fun. The last few years, I've gotten into Spartan racing and now the new Spartan Deca series. A lot of the things that I've learned on that journey, I think, are very applicable to the law enforcement side of my past, and things that I've learned in order to be able to perform at my peak physically. They really helped me understand how some of the challenges of working in public safety can impact my health and well-being. And so I got on the journey very early in my career. I just stumbled on it. It's not like I intended to go down this path. Probably just like a lot of you, though, I recognize some of the things that we were doing were not necessarily conducive to good health. So we're going to talk about some of those things. One of the areas where I want to focus on is officer longevity. And I mean, not just in terms of living a long life, but living a long, happy, healthy life. Peter Attia, he's a doctor who hosts a podcast called The Drive, and he uses the expression or the term that the centenarian decathlon or decathlete, meaning that if you want to live to be 100 and you want to be able to be functional at 100, then you can't wait until you're in the second half of your life to start preparing for that. You really need to start early in life, and the sooner the better. And I think in policing, it's the same way. We are all required to pass a physical fitness test before we can graduate from our academies. I'm almost certain that's universal across the country. After that, however, we know that there's only about 2% of police departments in the country that require any type of physical fitness requirement to continue in your law enforcement career. And that's something that I think we really need to take a close look at. And I want to bring experts and others onto the show to talk about why that might not be a good thing, and why focusing on physical fitness and physical health can actually improve all of the metrics that we're looking for across the span of a career. And maybe the most important metric of all is, when you get to the end of your career, are you going to retire healthy and happy, or are you going to be broken and broke? You know, this is not anything new that I'm telling you, but I think it's important for us to really understand that it doesn't have to be that way. I don't like it when, you know, when we make fun of the fat cop or we make the donut jokes. Okay, I can laugh at a donut joke here and there. But where I think sometimes where we miss opportunities is when we don't ask why. Why are these things occurring? Why are cops overweight? Why are we having poor performance displayed on a national and international scale in our mainstream media when an officer does something wrong? And why do we continue to focus on bad outcomes instead of bad systems that are creating bad outcomes? All of these things we want to talk about. So, yeah, so I know it sounds crazy. Who wants to live to be 100? If you're in this job long enough, you see some things, you see shit that you're like, yeah, no, I don't want to live that long. But the idea to know that it's possible to get there and be healthy and functional, I think that's intriguing. And I think it gives us a goal, something to shoot for. So let's begin our journey with the end in mind. From the time you're starting your career and progressing through the time that you retire, and then progressing even better yet into what you do in your second half of your life post-retirement, where you're enjoying yourself and you really get to enjoy the fruits of that hard-earned pension that you've earned. And, you know, and one of my goals would be let's focus on trying to bankrupt our pension systems. But yeah, I don't want to go down that road, but that's a whole other discussion. And I'm sure we'll get to it at some point. But yeah, one of my favorite quotes, I think most of you have probably heard it. If you've never read The Prince by Machiavelli, I would encourage you to do so. It's a great book. I read it a long, long time ago, and recently I had to dust it off. But I think the most famous quote from that book that people hear often is, "There is nothing more difficult to execute, nor dubious of success, nor more dangerous to administer than to introduce a new order of things." That concept of bringing something new, it's an age-old challenge. It's not anything new. In policing, you know, the old joke is that cops hate two things. They hate change and they hate the way things are. You know, true. There's a lot of reasons why we don't like change, because sometimes change is unnecessary. And there's a lot of times that change is necessary. But really, in the end, it's just about understanding the why behind it. I think when we can understand the why behind anything, it makes it easier to move in a new direction. And I think the new direction that we need to focus on in policing is, how do we build the officer from day one to maximize their success throughout their career? If think about it in terms of this, if you were going to build Super Cop, how would you build him? Where would you start? What are the things that you would want to teach him or her? What are the things you would want her to understand early in her career, the things that will help him progress through the career and be successful? So that's the concept of Coptimizer, cop optimization. You know, years ago when I coined that phrase, the other one I thought of was POPO, police officer performance optimization. I don't know. I'll use that in some ways, but I want you to think of Coptimizer and the Coptimizer podcast as an amalgam of health and wellness and performance related ideas, plans, programs, lifestyles, here to provide illumination for a path forward in comprehensive officer performance. Your programs designed to teach police officers and others the optimal lifestyle habits to enhance personal health and wellness, which ultimately translates to optimal performance, not just at work, but also at home. Public safety employees, police officers in particular, face significant health risk associated with job-related stressors that subject them to increased risk of disease and early mortality rates. Here on the Coptimizer, we want to share evidence-based approaches regarding things such as sleep hygiene, nutrition, exercise, stress reduction, all the things that will make a difference. Because we know the current data is not good. It's not promising at all. In fact, it's downright scary. Data suggests that 80% of today's police officers are overweight. Of those, 40% obese. Of those, 20%, upwards of 20% morbidly obese. Dr. John Violante is probably one of our best experts in providing evidence and data to support why the job of policing is toxic. He wrote a book called Dying for the Job, and he's recently updated a lot of his information, and I encourage everyone to read it. But, you know, in that he talks about the average lifespan of an officer is 21 years below that of the national average. That's in males, but it's not much different for females. And there's a reason for this. Cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of cops. It's not gunfire or assault. So it doesn't really matter how much time you spend training on how to shoot a gun, how to fight. All those things are certainly important. But if you're not training to prevent a heart attack, then you are missing the greatest opportunity to give you a long and healthy life. So we're going to talk about that on the show, and we're going to talk about ways that you can identify risk and ways that you can mitigate them and ultimately prevent them and perform at your highest levels. But we have to do this by providing resources, education, programs that are going to turn the needle on these things and move towards improvement. Because one thing that gets neglected when we start talking about poor health and poor health outcomes, those things are incredibly important. But those things are inextricably linked to performance. And I want us to all think about that, because we've seen a lot of examples, particularly in the last 5 to 7 years, in the advent of, you know, as body cameras become more and more prolific, you know, we've seen it firsthand what poor outcomes can do. You know, the mainstream media focuses on it, that creates a political focus. And you know, sadly, I think the ultimate focus winds up being on the mistakes. We're looking downstream at bad outcomes. What we're not good at is looking upstream to understand what we are doing systematically that causes these bad outcomes. We're reactive to fixing performance-related issues rather than being proactive in preventing them. Look, you know, this job is way, way too difficult and complex to expect perfection. But we must do better in terms of preparing our officers. This means we have to focus more on how we as humans perform. The technical and tactical skills are always going to need to be taught, and taught in the best ways with the most advanced methodologies that are going to ensure we're as good as we can be. But we can't stop there. Poor health is not conducive to optimal performance. And if we think about this in the context of daily work performance, we can begin to understand the scope of this problem. Police officers performing at suboptimal health levels will have a more difficult time maintaining an average or acceptable working performance. And we're talking about just the basic job functions: handling routine calls for service, traffic stops, crashes, basic investigations. The more dynamic service calls require a higher level of skill to manage the outcomes successfully. Skills that are a direct derivative of health and fitness, such as your psychomotor skills, high-speed driving, firearms manipulation, thinking under pressure, force application ranging from hand-to-hand combat all the way up to taser or lethal weapon deployment. And those are just a few examples. We in this profession, I think at times, have been focusing on the tools and the technology, which everybody loves. I love talking technology, and we're going to talk technology on the show, particularly when it comes to AI and optimization and data. I mean, I love technology. But most importantly, what I want to focus on is the human operating system, because that's the most precious resource that we have in policing. It's our officers. Nothing else matters if we're not investing properly in our officers, if we're not optimizing individuals first, because it's the individual that is optimized that we place into a system. And if the system is broken, we're not going to have the success that we could have with individually optimized officers. So on this podcast, we're going to share stories and examples from experts, people who've been there and done that, not just in policing, but we're going to share stories anywhere that we can find them where we think there is going to be value and benefit to you. And I want to talk about, you know, why this is important just real briefly, and then I'm going to be quiet, and then we're going to move on to our episodes. I think probably in the first, you know, 6 months of this show, well, you're probably going to hear a lot of stories about very public failures in policing. And, you know, I use that word failure because we had some really bad outcomes. But I want us to think about not just in terms of pointing fingers at individual officers. I want us to think about systems. So if we think about Uvalde, let's break it down just real quickly and then apply that to the context of what we want to talk about on this show. I think there we had a good example of, we had officers that were in the right place at the right time. They had the equipment that they needed, but we got a bad outcome. And the bad outcome focused, I think publicly, the focus really was on poor decision-making, not making decisions, not taking the correct action at the right time. One of the first failures there may have been, and I say may have been because I wasn't there. And while I did read the reports, one of the things that I learned as a chief is that you got to be careful about jumping to conclusions. You got to get all the information that you can get before you can come to any conclusion. We can, I think, make quick assessments at time based on what we know in the moment, but it's important for us to really take a deep dive before we speak publicly about failures and what we did right or wrong to know for sure. Being on a podcast, I guess we have a little bit more leeway. I say that, you know, with a little caution, because I don't want us to assume that we're doing this to be overly critical. I want us to learn from what we've done well and what we haven't done well. With that being said, we have a subject crashes car. He's walking towards the school. He's carrying a rifle. And reports were that the officer asked for permission to engage. And there is, you know, that's a decision-making issue right there. And so if we break that down, let's think about why. Why would somebody ask for permission in that situation? If you're not a trained police officer, you can make a lot of assumptions why. But if you are an officer, depending on the organization and the structure you've been brought up in, if you work in an environment where you're always being second-guessed for the decisions that you make, if you're not given the autonomy to make good and bad decisions, then you might think twice before you pull the trigger on a firearm. Now, if you're working in an environment like we have been for the last 7 years, where every decision when it comes to lethal force, there is a segment of our society that automatically assumes the officer was wrong, then that's going to make you think twice. So we have a confidence and a competence issue right there. At the core of that decision-making process is the human brain, and it's processing information, and it's trying to decide right now what to do. And in some cases, what we know tragically is you don't get a second chance. If we miss an opportunity early, we may not get a second chance down the road. So if you go back to that human operating system question, are we preparing our officers to be ready to make those critical decisions? Because that starts long before any officer shows up at a school shooting incident or a fight in the street or a domestic violence in a call. All of those things can go wrong. Some of them just unfortunately just get played out at a national level, and some of them lead to very, very tragic consequences. We have to ask ourselves, are we doing the hard things to be ready to make good decisions, to get the operating system functioning properly? Did we have a poor fitness routine? Do we lack good nutrition? Are we not sleeping well? Are we working extra jobs, or are we being forced to work overtime because we're short-staffed? All of those things can have an impact on that moment. Some of them can be individual failures. Some of these things can be administrative failures, but let's admit it, some of them can be societal failures as well. When it comes to training, when it comes to force-on-force training, are we preparing ourselves to handle stress? Are we doing force-on-force simulations that put us under pressure, that make us fight through pain, uncertainty, doubt, fear? Or are we taking the easy way? Are we showing up to Sims training wearing three levels of clothes, three layers, because we don't want to feel the pain? That's an individual problem, but it's also an administrative problem. Are we complaining about the difficulty of our training? Are administrators not pushing difficult training because we fear injury, or worse yet, we fear complaints from officers? Do we have a complacent mindset that it's always going to be somebody else's responsibility? I'm not going to take the shot because somebody else will. I'm going to let somebody else be responsible in this moment, not me. Sometimes we have to ask these difficult questions and we have to be self-aware. We have to self-reflect. Because if we don't, we're going to fail ourselves. And when we fail ourselves, we fail our organizations and we fail our communities. We got to put in the work. We got to put in the work. But we also need to make sure that the work we're doing is the right work. Do we have the best information? Do we have the best technology? Do we have the best resources? As administrators, knowing that we're asking officers to do very difficult things, to make very difficult decisions under extreme duress, oftentimes, are we preparing them for success or are we setting them up for failure? Communities, are we supporting our police departments? I can promise you defunding is not the answer. We need to fund and invest and reinvest. And quite frankly, we need to double down and we need to do it in ways that we haven't even begun to acknowledge yet. We have to open our hearts and our minds and most importantly, our budgets to providing the resources to prepare in advance of tragedy. That's how we prevent systematic failures. And when we do make mistakes, we have to be honest about why we made them. Was it an individual failure or was it a systematic failure? Are we overtasking and under-resourcing officers and then expecting them to operate perfectly? And then when they don't, when they make a mistake, do we use them as a scapegoat? Do we blame them? Or do we take an honest assessment at the way we're training, equipping, and preparing and saying, you know what? This is the fundamental attribution error. We're blaming officers for a system problem. And communities have a big say, and they have to understand the system in which police officers are working today. We cannot continue to ask officers to solve every problem in our communities. Because if you ask a police officer to solve a problem, guess what? He's going to do his best to solve a problem because that's what we do. It's easy to kick people when they're down. It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to blame. But on this show, what we're hoping to do is educate each other and our communities about why all of these things are so important, why focusing on the individual is so critically important to performance, and why that's going to help us meet what I call my big, hairy, audacious goal, right? Anyone that has read Jim Collins' work, the author of Good to Great, they're familiar with that term. What is your big, hairy, audacious goal? Mine is that I want to hire police officers healthy. I want to retire them healthy. And I want them to thrive in that space in between and whatever comes after policing. And I want them to bring value to their families, to their friends, to their communities. And I want to do it at scale. Stephen Kotler, he's the author of The Art of Impossible. And he calls this the massively transformative purpose, the MTP. What is your MTP? And if you understand what that is, or if you spend time thinking about what that is, you can really start to build a structure around how you're going to get there. And in policing, I think it starts in day one. I have a lot of ideas, and we're going to talk to a lot of experts on how we think we can make that happen in policing. So let's wrap up this introductory episode, which is a couple of quick stories. So one is from a very early time in my career, when I was working with a field training officer, he was a smoker, drank a lot of coffee, ate a lot of unhealthy food, not the healthiest person. And he said something to me once that really resonated with me. And it was kind of like one of those clarifying moments early on in my career where, you know, cops can tend to get a little bit negative when they start talking about the job and life and things that you have to get done. But, he made a comment to me that, you know, one day he's like, you'll understand, Flannelly. He's like, you're going to be fat, miserable, and unhappy just like the rest of us. He was sincere when he said it. And that really stuck with me. And, you know, it was, you know, it was that moment where I realized, like, I got to make a choice, because he's showing me what the future looks like and he's telling me what my future is going to be. And I can either believe him or not. And I chose not to believe him. And I chose to believe that, you know what, there is a different path. And that's the path that I've been on. And I'll give you another story about why that's important. Because it was a few years, probably not even a few years later, but again, early in my career, I went to an alarm call one night in a business area where we knew we had an active burglar that was working. And it was a busy night. We arrived, there's two officers there. Business alarm is going off. There's a fence around the property, 8-foot chain link fence. And we are standing there. We can hear the alarm going off. We know there's only two of us. There's no other officers available. So I hop the fence and I'm getting ready to, you know, approach the building. And I turn around and look at my partner's on the other side of the fence. There was a moment there where I realized why, because he couldn't climb the fence. He couldn't get over this 8-foot fence. You know, so I made the decision to go check and clear the building by myself, right? So fast forward, you know, it's not about that decision. Although, you know, you can look back and say, yeah, that was a poor decision. I was young and impatient, but you know, I really reflected on that call for a long time, because while I was easily able to hop over that fence, that was not a barrier to me. And I didn't recognize the fact that could be a barrier to somebody else. And I didn't think about the implications of this in that moment. But yeah, you know what? What happens if I go and I clear the building and I find a door open, or, you know, there's a burglar and I wind up getting into an engagement and I'm solo when my backup's on the other side of the fence? Whose fault is that? Would it be mine? Would it be his? You know, and in the end, it would be my fault, right? I have to take accountability for my decisions that I make. I can't be accountable for decisions that other people make. But the lesson that I hope to impart from that story is that while I might have made a bad decision in that moment, the bigger lesson is that my preparation and the way that I approach my job doesn't impact just me. It impacts others. And I can't help but to think, had something gone wrong on that call, let's say I do get into a fight or a shooting and I do get injured or worse yet killed, that would be bad. But what would be worse is being the officer that was on the other side of the fence and couldn't get in to help. Not because he didn't want to, not because he wouldn't have given everything in that moment to be there to help, but because of decisions that were made long before that night that led to the inability to be able to climb a fence in the moment where we would need you to climb a fence. It seems like a small thing, but it's not. I mean, because, you know, there are things worse than death, right? And that's living with the idea that there was something that you could have done, and maybe, quite frankly, should have done to prepare better for that moment. So I don't want officers to ever be in that position. Failure is a part of life. We're going to do things where we're not going to have success. But what's not acceptable is that we use that as an excuse not to start, regardless of where you are today. Today, you can make a decision about, are you going to improve? Are you going to work on being a little bit better tomorrow than you were today? Or are you not? And if you're not, it's time for some self-reflection, because we can't keep seeing some of these stories just pound the profession over and over again for things that are preventable. They're avoidable. As administrators, we got to ask the hard question, are we doing everything that we can to ensure that we're preparing our officers for the difficult things that they have to do? It's not easy. And it requires all hands on deck, and it requires everybody contributing. But it can be done. There's no doubt in my mind. We can do it. We have the support, even though we sometimes don't feel like we do. And we have some of the brightest and best people with character, integrity, humility, that are in this profession, that are doing it for the right reasons, that want to improve the profession moving forward. And I believe we can improve our profession. We can work on being a little bit better tomorrow than we were today. And we can avoid pitfalls by preparing from the lessons we're learning and applying them forward, going upstream to solve the downstream problem. So thanks for being here. I'm really looking forward to this. We got some great episodes coming. Yeah, I'm really, really excited. And I appreciate you spending some of your valuable time to join us on this journey. We're looking forward to hearing from you. We're looking forward to hearing about guests that you want to have on the show. Yeah, we've got about 30 already lined up, and I got about 1,000 more that I can't wait to bring. All right, so that's enough for today. Looking forward to joining you on our future episodes, and we'll see you soon. And that concludes another episode of the Coptimizer podcast. Thank you for listening. And again, thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us. Remember, listening to others and how they optimize their lives is one thing, but to transform yourself, you have to take action. There are different paths to excellence, but to accelerate your own personal growth, I urge you to consider getting a coach. And here's why. While your time is valuable, I also want you to consider something. Your time is fixed. We know how much of it we have. Energy, on the other hand, is not. The decisions we make about how to charge and refresh our body, mind, and spirit will ultimately determine how much energy we have to invest in our time. So, to make the most of each day, we need that energy. So if you're in law enforcement, consider getting a coach, and do so by going to axoncoaching.com. Check us out and contact us today. Until our next episode, I'm 1042.